So if you are watching online, you won't be able to see this, but here on the screen we have on the projector, this is the city of Bereznicki in Russia's Ural Mountains. And the city is slowly sinking into the ground. Here's the problem. 150,000 people live in that town, but they built it directly over the potash mines, which during Soviet times was standard practice. But after nearly 100 years of mining underneath them, they literally have caverns, giant caverns underneath, and so they built some walls and some pillars to hold it up. But then in 2006, a freshwater spring began flowing through the mines, and the water dissolved the pillars, and so caverns started caving in underneath their town, causing sinkholes up above. So they're now debating what to do about this, and some are suggesting they need to move the entire town. They make a lot of money in that area from the mining, and so they have to figure out all of that. But their entire town was built on a faulty foundation. And because of that, they're left wondering, when's the sinkhole going to appear next? Where is it going to appear? So as I said already, this is our last sermon in the Tough Issues series. And so I'm going to ask the question, or talk about the question, how can I be sure I'm saved? Here's the problem that I've noticed that many people encounter. We have sort of two sides here. So on one side, some people take their faith very flippantly. And so they turn to Jesus on a whim, and they don't actually let Jesus rule their life. And so then later on, they encounter difficulty, they encounter hardship, or they just encounter distraction, and they eventually find themselves wandering from the faith. And so at that point, they or their friends or their family wonder, are they saved? Are they truly saved? Have they lost their salvation? Well, what's going on here with this person? So that's one group of people. But on the other side, we have some people here that take their faith very seriously, but they have a wrong understanding of it. And so consequently, they often find themselves worried that they may not be saved. And so they live in fear, wondering after the next mistake or after doing this or doing this, am I truly saved? Now, both of these groups on either side of the spectrum are in a bad place, sort of like that town in Bereznicki, Russia. They're built on a faulty foundation. And so my goal this morning is to make sure that at least in regards to salvation, that you are building on solid ground. And so that later on, that you won't cave in, at least in your faith. Now, if you've been a Christian for a while, some of what I'm going to be saying this morning, you're going to be saying, I've heard that before, Pastor Kyle. And I want to encourage you, just hang with me. As we get into some of the applications, some of the other parts, there's still some stuff here for you. But we have to talk about some of the basics before we can get into some of the other stuff as well. And so I'm going to begin this morning by giving three statements on salvation that will help us have a biblical understanding of salvation. And so here is statement number one. It all comes down to faith. Faith. And when I say faith, I want you to think about faith in two separate ways now. So in the first way, we are saved through faith. Through faith. You see, Jesus makes it very clear that we cannot save ourselves in our own power. That spiritually speaking, we cannot save ourselves. Ephesians 2, 8 and 9. For by grace you have been saved, what is that? Through your actions. Is that what it says? No. Through faith. And this is not your own doing. It is a gift of God, not a result of works, so that no one can boast. So I want you to think of salvation like being lost at sea, and you're stranded on this little raft with no water, no food, and you are essentially left for dead there. There you are, out at sea, and then out of nowhere comes up to you this person in a billion-dollar boat, yacht, billion-dollar yacht. I looked it up. This is, at least according to the internet, a billion-dollar yacht. And so the yacht driver, or whatever the yacht person is, they pull up next to you on your little thing, on your little raft, and they say, "You want a lift? You want a lift?" Now, you have a choice to make at that point. Okay, so you can continue doing your own thing, or you can trust in the guy, what he's saying. In other words, you can have faith in the other guy. But beyond that one decision, you are not given a lot of options here. There is nothing left for you to do. And so he is the one that sought you out. He is the one that's offering you a ride. And he is the one that's taking you to safety. All you can do is say yes or no. And that is salvation right there in a nutshell from a human perspective. So there's a lot more theologically going on here, but at least from a human perspective, the only thing you can do for salvation is say, "I accept. I accept." And then you follow what the guy tells you to do. And so you can't and you don't save yourself. It's all faith. And so we are saved through faith. Jesus is offering you life. Jesus is saying, "Come, follow me, and I'll give you life." And if you follow him through faith, then he will save you. But that's through faith. There's a second part of faith, though. And this is that we continue in faith. In faith. And what I mean is that since Jesus is the one who saves you, Jesus is the one who will keep you saved. So your role going forward is not to try to keep yourself saved, but to simply keep faith in the one who has already saved you. So this is a small but very important difference. I remember when I worked as a college student at Fairfield End in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and I worked Friday and Saturday night, all night long, 7 to 7. And one Friday night, there was a lady that came down from the hotel room side of things, not the front entrance. She came down, and she's all shaken and disheveled, and she said, "My boyfriend just threatened me. Help me." And I'm like, "Oh, boy." And so I take her, and I put her into the manager's office, and I lock the door. And then just a couple of moments later, a guy comes down, and he's like, "Hey, I'm looking for a woman. Have you seen anyone come by?" And I did the only thing if some of you have seen a picture of me in college, I'm not a muscular dude here. And so I said, "Uh-uh." And so he walks out to the parking lot looking for his girlfriend, probably ex-girlfriend now by this point. And I now call the police. And I call them and they come. And when they come, I essentially do this. I point to the guy, and I point to the office, and then I step back. Because at that point, I'm basically saying, "Police, I can't handle this, but you can. You take over." And spiritually speaking, that is what we do in faith. You see, in faith, we are turning to Jesus, and we're saying, "Jesus, I've done my part. Now you do yours." And so in terms of salvation, our job's over. Our job is over, and the rest is up to Jesus. And so we're letting him take control of our life, and we're just having faith that he will do what he says he will do. It's faith. Faith that Jesus will do it, not faith in ourselves. And so it's not that we're trying to keep ourselves saved. Going forward, our main focus is to simply keep faith in the one who has already saved. And so it comes down to this here. This is a long sentence. I gave a lot of edits to it. Go ahead and put it up on the screen here. This is the best I could do. But once you genuinely put your faith in Jesus, you are saved. But it is not your power that keeps you saved. You stay saved based on the power of Jesus. And so the thing now that we do is not try to keep ourselves saved. We just keep faith in the one who has saved us. And so I ask you, will you have the faith in the one who saved you? Will you have the faith in the one who saved you? See, many people who doubt their salvation doubt it simply based on their own actions. They think they're not good enough. They think they're not acting Christian enough. They think they're not reading the Bible enough. And you know what? You might be perfectly correct in all of those things. And but the reality is that you will never be good enough. And so it's not based on your own actions. It's based on Jesus, Jesus, and Jesus. So will you have faith in him, no matter where your actions take you? Now, I know in a moment I'm going to be talking about actions. So I'm going to seem like I'm contradicting myself here. And there's a lot of different perspectives here. But from a human perspective, I want you to see it's faith. Faith in Jesus. Faith in Jesus. And Jesus is the one who saves. And when you mess up, don't think that you've lost something. It's because you are saved through Jesus and you remain saved in Jesus. I read about a Christian figure skater named Paul Wiley. In the 1988 Calgary Olympics, he was beginning his program and he goes up for a jump. And this is what he writes later on, what happens. He says, I start slipping, and now I realize it, I'm falling. All I hear is I collapse to the ice is the empathetic groan of what seems like a million voices. I struggle to get up, hustling to get to the next move. Thoughts racing through my mind as I try to cover the disappointments. There is no way of erasing a fall from the judges' minds, nor can I jam the television transmission in the living rooms and of family and friends watching back home. This is live, and I have just blown it. And he writes then how he had a choice at that point. He had a choice because he had 4 minutes left in his program, so he could skate from that point forward believing that he had failed and skate like a failure, or he could skate believing that something constructive could come out of his mishap. And so he skated, and he skated intentionally. And I wish I had this would be a better illustration if he won the gold at that point, but he came in 10th. So, sorry, but the next year, he did win a silver medal the next Olympics, 4 years later. He won a silver medal with that mindset in France. Now, as Christians, listen, we're going to fail, aren't we? We're going to mess up. But we serve a God who is bigger than your failures. And so will you have the faith in him to press on even when you mess up? So that's the first statement on salvation. And this that has more to do with being saved. But the second statement has more to do with how to know if you're saved. So statement two is true salvation is followed by fruit. By fruit. We've all seen those people who, you know, pray the prayer or walk down the aisle, and then nothing seems to change, does it? And here's the tricky thing about salvation. I'm coming, standing here before you, saying I don't have all the answers here. But the external actions, for example, the praying, is not what saves you. The true conversion comes from not from the external actions, but from the internal heart. And the internal heart of wanting God in your life leads you to say that prayer. But the prayer in and of itself doesn't save you. Now, the unfortunate thing, at least from a pastoral side, is that I don't have a window into your spiritual heart to know what is truly going on. And the reality is that neither do you. And so one of the ways that we can know that we are saved is by looking at what is produced out of the heart of our life. This is a picture of my garden from a few years back. I don't think any commentary is needed. Let me ask you, how does it look? How does it look? And the answer is not so good. Now, this is partially out of neglect. This is partially because we live in New Hampshire, and 6 months out of the year, you can't do much with it anyways. But this, just by looking at it, gives you a quick little check of the state of my garden. Now, there's more to consider, there's more to think about, and all this, but looking at it gives you a snapshot of what's going on there. And likewise, what is your heart producing? What is your heart producing? Is there spiritual fruit coming out of it? Because if there's not, then at least at a glance, there's probably something spiritually wrong going on inside of you. So I want to give you two types of actions for you to think about here. Two types of fruit for you to think about. And the first is actions, fruit of actions. James 2 talks about, "For as the body apart from the spirit is dead, so also faith apart from works is dead." And so that works there, that's actions. And he's not saying that we're saved through our works, but that our works show we are saved. 1 John 1:6, "If we say we have fellowship with him while we walk in darkness, we lie and do not practice the truth." So again, you can say one thing, but if your heart is producing different actions, then something is wrong in here. So that's the first kind of fruit. The second kind of fruit is inward change. John 15, "I am the vine, and you are the branches. Whoever abides in me, and I in him, he it is that bears much fruit. For apart from me, you can do nothing." So what fruit is he talking about here? He's talking about the fruit of God working in your life. And there's outward actions implied here, but it comes from an inward change that's there first. Galatians 5 talks about some of those types of fruit. And so there's love and joy, all those things that we learned in Sunday school. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such thing, there is no law. So the Bible makes it very clear that if Jesus is in your life, you will change from the inside out. It doesn't mean that you're going to be perfect. It doesn't mean that you're never going to sin or that you're never going to want to sin. But there is going to be this progression, this growth in your life as God is working in your heart. So there's the fruit. Here's statement number three. Those who are truly saved will endure to the end. 1 John 2:19. "They went out from us, but they were not of us. For if they had been of us, they would have continued in us. But they went out." What John is talking about there is he's saying that one way that you know someone is truly saved is that they do not give up on their faith. And so to phrase it another way is that those who are truly saved will last. They will last. Matthew 24:13, Jesus says this, talking about the end times. "But the one who endures to the end will be saved." And he's not talking that the enduring part is what saves you. I think he's saying what John is saying, that the one who endures to the end are the ones who are truly saved. I read about this couple from Sweden, and they went on a four-month-long honeymoon back in 2010. It must be nice in Sweden, four-month-long honeymoon there. But during their 4 months, they endured six natural disasters during their trip. And so Stefan and Erica left Sweden in December of 2010. And the first place they went was Munich, Germany, right when Europe was hit by one of its worst snowstorms. And then they went to Cairns, Australia, where there was a ferocious cyclone. And so they headed over to Brisbane, and the city was experiencing massive flooding. And so they traveled to Perth, narrowly escaping raging brush fire. And so they got out of Australia and went to New Zealand, arriving there just as a 6.3 magnitude earthquake took place. And so they went to Japan, where there was the largest earthquake on record. They've got to be reading Revelation at that point, thinking Jesus is coming back any moment. Six disasters during their little trip there. But notice what the husband says after all that. He says, we've certainly experienced more than our fair share of catastrophes, but the most important thing is that we're together and happy. What he's saying there, is, and what I think we can learn from this, is that they made it through all this difficulty, and if they're still doing well, then most likely this couple has a pretty strong marriage. And likewise, as we go through difficulty in life, do you run to God or do you run away from God? Because if you are sticking close to God when you encounter difficulty, then that is a sign that you are doing well spiritually. Likewise, if you run away from God when you're encountering difficulty, then that is a sign that you're spiritually not doing well. So those who are truly saved will endure to the end. So now that we've talked a little bit about different parts of salvation, I want to give you two things to think about as we start to wrap this up. So what should our response be? Having heard all of this, that it's faith, it's also actions, what should our response be? First, give careful thought to your faith. Give careful thought to your faith. Paul puts it this way in Philippians 2. He says, work out your salvation with fear and trembling. Now, he's not saying there that you need to be afraid that you're going to lose your salvation. What he's saying there is that you need to take your faith very seriously. That you need to not just walk around with your faith haphazardly, but that you need to take it as one of the most important things in your life. And so this impacts your eternal destiny. And so this is something that you must give serious consideration to and that you must give a lot of intentionality to in your life. I read about a pastor who went on a romantic trip with his wife to Napa Valley. And they went on a walk one evening. And on the walk, they walked past all these vineyards. And he noticed that as he looked at the vineyards, what struck him was the amount of work and thought that went into each vineyard. And he noted that a fruitful, productive vineyard doesn't just happen by accident. It doesn't just get neglected and just still come out fine. It takes an enormous amount of work and thought and action to get good fruit out of that vineyard. And so from a human perspective, you need to give your life, you need to treat your life like that vineyard. You need to treat it like it needs a lot of intentional thought, a lot of intentional action. Now, you can't control what's going on. God is ultimately in control, and he is ultimately the one who saves. But from a human side of things, he is saying, you make a decision to follow me. And so from the human side of things, you need to take it seriously. And so what does that involve? It involves pruning off the bad stuff. Getting the bad stuff out of your life. Watering your life with the Word of God and with church and all these things that are going to help you grow and nourish in your faith. Getting the dangerous things out. Getting the pests out. And then you let God do the rest. Good vineyards don't just happen. And when a person just sits back and does nothing spiritually, they are not going to grow. They're not going to grow. So as Paul says, work out your salvation with fear and trembling. Here's the second and the last thing. Remember that Christ is enough. That Christ is enough. 2 Corinthians 5. For our sake, he made him to be sin who knew no sin, so that we might become the righteousness of God. Notice there that there's no talk about what we do. There's no talk here anywhere in the righteousness part of things about what we can do in our own power. No, it's all about Jesus. As the old hymn goes, it's Jesus who paid it all. And all to him I owe. And sin had left a crimson stain, but what? He washed it white as snow. 2 Corinthians 3, not that we are sufficient in ourselves to claim anything as coming from us, but our sufficiency is from God. Is from God. So I want to encourage you as we think about all the salvation, I've given you a lot of things here. Remember, it comes down to resting in Christ, making Christ enough. In 2017, there was a man from Alaska who tried to cross a channel near Juneau on a homemade raft. More specifically, it was described as an inflatable duct-taped craft, complete with a paddle, a dog, and no life jacket. And so the person went out that day to try to cross it. And later on, the Coast Guard reported that the weather was calm that day, but they came across a man in a boat that was filling up quickly in the water in the middle of the channel. And so they had to rescue the man and the dog because the craft was deemed unsafe. Now, church, if there's one thing I could leave with you this morning, it's whether you've been a Christian for one day, for 50 years, or whether you've never put your faith in Jesus Christ, I want to leave you with this. Get to Jesus and stay in Jesus. Get to Jesus. Ask him to be the Lord of your life. And as I talked about, it's not the words that count. It's the heart behind the words. It's that you desperately need Jesus in your life. So get to Jesus. But then the second part is stay in Jesus. Stay in Jesus. If you've turned to him in the past, I encourage you to evaluate your life right now. Evaluate and see if there's anything in your life that is leading you to get out of the boat of Jesus, out of Jesus, and to walk away from him. Because he is all we need, and he is the safest place to be. And so far too often we think that we're like that man who can just float out into the middle of the water in our own homemade craft, thinking that we know better than Jesus, that we can do things in our own rule. I want to encourage you, don't think that. Get to Jesus and stay in Jesus. Let him be your rock. Let him be your refuge and rest in him. And if you'll do that, he will help you work out all the other details. I'm going to ask the worship team to come on up, and I'm going to close by reading three verses from Psalm 71. And we're going to read this prayerfully as we close up this sermon. In you, O Lord, do I take refuge. Let me never be put to shame. In your righteousness, deliver me and rescue me. Incline your ear to me and save me. Be to me a rock of refuge to which I may continually come. You have given the command to save me, for you are my rock and my fortress.